This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. New flood alerts in Central Texas today with communities still reeling from July 4th catastrophic flooding along the Guadalupe River. At least 94 confirmed dead, dozens of others missing, including 10 young campers and a counselor near Kerrville. Coast Guard rescue swimmer Scott Raskins is credited with saving as many as 200 campers at Camp Mystic when floodwaters swept through.
The real heroes, I think, were too the kids on the ground. Like, those guys are heroic and, you know, they were dealing with some of the worst times of their lives and they were staying strong. And that helped inspire me to kind of get in there and help them out.
At least one person has died in North Carolina after a separate storm triggered flash flooding in Chatham and Durham counties. President Trump says he's extending the reciprocal tariffs deadline for some countries to August 1st, sending letters that duties will kick in if trade deals are not finalized. The president holds a dinner and talks with Israel's prime minister tonight at the White House, a possible Gaza ceasefire deal among the topics. This is ABC News.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Shally Pittman. Planned Parenthood says hundreds of its clinics nationwide could be at risk of closing under a newly signed law backed by President Trump. President Trump signed the sweeping domestic tax and spending bill on July 4th. The legislation is projected to add trillions to the national debt, but includes deep cuts to food assistance and Medicaid. And although the law doesn't name Planned Parenthood, reproductive rights advocates say it could still have a major impact by blocking Medicaid reimbursements to any nonprofit health provider that offers abortion services.
The congressional bill that would defund Planned Parenthood would make Planned Parenthood essentially a prohibited entity, meaning it could not seek reimbursement from Medicaid for services like contraception care, gender-affirming care, STI treatment, testing, cancer screening. And the list goes on and on.
Michelle Velasquez, Chief Strategy Officer at Planned Parenthood Wisconsin, speaking last week following a state Supreme Court ruling that found a 19th century abortion ban no longer applies in Wisconsin. Medicaid funding for abortion services has long been limited under the Hyde Amendment, but this new law, if interpreted as advocates fear, would go further, barring Medicaid payments to clinics that offer abortions, even if a patient is seeking unrelated care.
So the estimate nationally from the Planned Parenthood Federation is that about 200 Planned Parenthood health centers across the country would likely close.
Nationally, Planned Parenthood served 2 million patients last year. Just 4% of its services were abortion-related. Most were for STI testing and treatment, contraception, and other reproductive health care. In Wisconsin, 54% of its revenue came from Medicaid, according to its 2022-2023 annual report. Planned Parenthood operates 21 clinics across Wisconsin. Only three provide abortion services.
Baseball tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from AmFam Field, where the Brewers open up a series against the LA Dodgers. Milwaukee with a 3-1 win over the Marlins yesterday. Brandon Woodruff held Miami to just two hits, one run, striking out eight on 70 pitches in six innings. Jackson Churio at the plate, top of the third on FanDuel Wisconsin.
And a drive into left field. That'll get a run in. Plenty. It is up and it is going to be gone. Jackson Churio goes deep. His 15th slider that backed up over the inside part of the plate, and Churio crushed it.
Freddy Peralta gets the start tonight after finding out next week he'll be at the All-Star game.
All the work that we put every day, when you have the right people around, and everything can be great.
Rhys Hoskins headed to the IL with a sprained right thumb. Andrew Vaughn being called up from Nashville to play first base. NBA, the Bucks have re-signed guard Ryan Rollins to a three-year deal worth $12 million. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
As Wisconsin has a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight, a few showers and thunderstorms, and lows in the upper 60s. For tomorrow, lingering storms, then clearing out, a high in the mid-80s, and more sunshine for Wednesday, again mid-80s. Humidity up Thursday with storms possible Friday. It's 82 right now.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
Years ago, I had I think I had a rainbow. No, it was a shirt. It was given to me, and I wore it because I support all people. And a friend of mine, like, sure, you want to walk around in that? You know, a t-shirt, people might think. I'm like, people might think I'm a human being that supports other human beings. I wore sports jerseys sometimes. No one ever says, are you worried people are going to think you're on the Cubs?
I don't think anyone would think that, though.
Oh, you haven't seen my curveball.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Matt Nair on air.
PJ Leash, the bug guy, he heads the entomology department at UW-Madison, and we are talking ticks.
When a deer tick transmits Lyme disease, it takes 36 hours, so about a day and a half. And that's why, in my mind, one of the single best things you can do as a precaution is to do regular tick checks. Because you've removed it, your risk goes down greatly to basically zilch.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. Tom Kircher from Wisconsin Watch will be here to take a look at Wisconsin headlines, including back the state budget and a what's worse for you, being sore or being sick. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4. You're listening to the Talk of Lacrosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
That is what our framers intended, and I don't care if it's your team winning today. It won't always be that way. So what in the heck are they doing?
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
Are you kidding me?
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
I think that speaks to Wisconsinites in a really special way that I've been to 15 baseball stadiums. It ain't the same in other places.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome back, everybody, and a happy Monday afternoon. Hope your Monday has gone well after a long holiday weekend. I've got a fine guest co-host with me. His name is Matt Rothschild. Thanks again, Matt, for being with me on Mondays and for guest hosting while I was away. It's a pleasure to be here with you. Folks, a bit of breaking news this afternoon in case you missed it earlier today. El Salvador filed legal papers with the United Nations indicating that the United States both facilitated the use of the Salvadorian prison infrastructure and retained jurisdiction over all U.S. deportees that were imprisoned at the Salvadorian prison. That's a big deal. Just breaking this afternoon, we'll be tracking that story. Also, City of Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson announcing the withdrawal of a $34 million revitalization grant for the 6th Street corridor in Milwaukee. That'll cost Milwaukee ballpark 450 to 500 jobs, courtesy of the Trump administration. Big thanks to State Senator Dianne Hesselbein, who joined us for the last half hour talking about what improvements Democrats were able to get over the GOP proposed budget. And that brings me, Matt, to our next subject, because there has been a lot of debate, some of it tied to the biennial budget, from some Democrats saying, you know, the governor didn't go hard enough, didn't draw enough bright lines in the sand, didn't go out there and advocate for his budget, didn't make a strong enough case across the state. And basically, he shouldn't run for a third term. Of course, Matt and I want to hear from all of you. What do you think? Should the governor run for a third term? Should he have decided a while ago? Should he have made it clear before the budget? Is it appropriate to say now, or should he wait longer? 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. It's also completely fine to say, I don't care. I just want things to work better, which we will discuss as well. Here's another way to put this question to you. If tomorrow's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Cap Times, whatever your favorite local news outlet is, if the headline tomorrow was Governor Evers announces run for third term, what would your immediate reaction be? 855-752-4842. This is one of these fascinating questions, Matt, because I think Tony Evers, from a personality standpoint, is someone that appeals to Wisconsinites. He's not a great speaker. That actually plays to his advantage, I think, as a candidate, because he sounds like a regular person. You believe what he's saying. He doesn't seem like a slicked up politician. And he's also an incredibly affable, nice guy. I think he feels like somebody a lot of Wisconsinites know. And I think that authenticity, that believing what you say, that person, that candidate that people can see, touch, and feel is really important now. That that's been one of the lessons from these last few election cycles, regardless of which particular race you're looking at. How important do you think likability and relatability, and what I'm just going to call regular personability, is for especially Wisconsinites in election cycles?
Well, I do think that's how he's gotten elected twice. You know, he knows who he is. He doesn't pretend to be someone he isn't. And it, in some ways, it's odd that he's become governor and that he's won twice because he doesn't have great natural political skills. As you say, he's not a great speaker. He's kind of a horrible debater, if truth be told.
Yes,
and yet he's been a really good governor, though. You know, I wish he was more of a fighter. I wish he fought harder on the budget or publicly campaigned harder and drew more lines in the sand, and was able, if at all possible, to get more money K through 12. I mean, that's one of the crucial things that was missing, as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, I understand that the Democrats don't have the cards in the legislature.
Right.
I understand why the minority leader did what she did, and she did so very skillfully with input, which shows her leadership abilities there. So, yeah, I mean, I'm kind of hoping that the governor doesn't run again, though. I want more of a fighter. I think this is and he's been really good on some issues, you know, across the board, actually, and been a good backstop. But I want someone out there fighting. I think, especially with Trump and the disaster that Trump is imposing on us, I think the need for a strong public fighter out there is really important. And so I'm looking for someone.
Yeah, so here's the secondary question. And again, folks, if you're just tuning in, Matt and I are batting around, should Governor Evers run for a third term? If your local newspaper here in the state of Wisconsin had the headline tomorrow, Evers announces run for third term, what would your immediate reaction be? 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Here's the sort of like really big picture question that I think looms large over every single race across the country. I understand when we say, I want a fighter, I think what we're saying is I want an authentic communicator that understands what's really important to people. That's just my take, because here's, I think, what the quandary is, Matt, what the tension is fighting is one thing, governing is another. I'll put that out there as thing one. Thing two is, I think, the fighter, the hard line drawer, the uncompromising is much more possible for folks running on the MAGA side of the ticket. I just, that's their political universe. It's bright lines, it's personal fealty, right? And that they have been, and Republicans for the last 50 years have been really good at intra-party enforcement, right, of their dogma, whatever that is. Certainly, they're probably better at it now than they've ever been with Donald Trump at the helm of their party. The same cannot be true of Democrats. Is the fighter, is somebody who goes hard with very bright lines, does that compromise or does it make it more difficult to build that big tent? 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. In other words, people talk about the Obama coalition, right? Like the people that had to be brought together to win, especially when you look at a state that is truly as purple as Wisconsin is. What do you think, Matt? If somebody goes hard, and I don't mean shying away from the issues, right? I mean, being very clear about what you want, and there is improvement on Governor Evers' part that I would say is an absolutely fair criticism. But can you almost overcorrect as a candidate, especially when you're trying to run statewide in Wisconsin? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think the nub of the question, what you're driving at, is can anybody other than Evers win? Or can anybody who campaigns like Evers or has the demeanor of the governor can that person win? And that's an open question. We won't know until we run the experiment. And it's a dangerous experiment. But there's no guaranteeing also that Evers is going to win again either. His numbers weren't great in the latest poll. So that's an open question. I know Dan Schaefer has talked about the age issue here on Civic Media and at Recombobulation Area. But I think there are a lot of good potential candidates out there on the Democratic side, which is why I'm hoping the governor decides soon, one way or another, because it's not fair to everybody else if he doesn't do it.
Folks, what would your thought be if tomorrow's headline in your local paper said Evers announces run for a third term? 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Texter from the WAUK says, careful what you wish for. Tony Evers has done things that benefit the most of us here in Wisconsin the entire time he's been in office. His liability factor is that he's good and clearly doesn't demonstrate some of the problems that Biden had or that Trump has. It's interesting. I don't think Tony Evers toots his own horn enough. My question is always not, is there somebody that could run and win that's not named Tony Evers? Because my belief is always, yes, there's always someone. There's never one single candidate or a candidate that's entitled to the presumption of you're the guy for the next time around simply by virtue of incumbency. But I think what you've put your finger on, Matt, is that Democrats seem to wait around. Right? They're waiting. It's always, well, let's see. What and some of this is gerontocracy. It's the older folks in some of these jobs, which if you're highly capable and you're getting it done, I don't care how old you are. But the presumption that Democrats have that, oh, we don't want to upset the party royalty, instead of vigorously building and then advocating for a succession plan and a pipeline, I think that's always been a problem for Democrats, and I think we're seeing everybody's just waiting around, right?
Like, you know, I totally agree with you, Maggie, and, you know, back to Biden. I mean, a lot of people are blaming Biden's wife and this and the sons and the staff. Yeah, they have responsibility. The media missed it, too. But, where was Newsom? He could have thrown his hat in the ring. You know, where was Gretchen Whitmer? There's no one saying you can't do it. And so none of the big potential candidates got in, and we're in that crisis. So I think right now the prospective candidates on the Democratic side, no matter what Evers said, should be throwing their hats in the ring.
And that, Matt, I think is part of the solution here. And to have points of differentiation with the governor and from Republicans, Democrats shouldn't have to come in one, like, ultra royal blue variety. And I think that, again, a lot of policing of who is the right kind of candidate, not enough succession planning, and frankly, not enough discussions with folks that are currently in seats about, so what's the plan for when you're done, right? How do we build pipeline? 855-752-4842. Pat, listening on WGBW, says age is nothing but a number. I think there was a song about that. Might not have aged too well. That was sung by Aaliyah. I won't go down the R. Kelly rabbit hole. Pat from WGBW says, age is just a number. Tony Evers should run again. We've got one of our good friends on the line. It's Jeannie from Eau Claire. Say hello to Matt. What do you think, Jeannie?
I say sign me up. I think Governor Evers has been an outstanding governor. He's a governor that's been on our side of the state doing things for our side of the state. We never seen the governor over on our side of the state for long, long, many, many years, and the people like him over here as an independent. I think he's great. I know a lot of Republicans who really like him, and definitely Democrats do. Age don't mean a thing, folks. I'm 70, and God darn it, you guys got to quit picking on the age, because there's a lot of people in their 80s can do a great job, too. I mean, I know that we need more younger people. I support younger people, and they got to get in at start in there and start now and get them young people in and gradually move them up. But he is not a show horse. He is a workhorse.
Thanks so much. That's Jeannie from Eau Claire. Let me be clear, because I think that there are folks at every age that could be excellent chief elected executives and legislators. And I think there's lots of examples of them. My question is, particularly when you've got incumbency, multiple terms, and age, what does that equate to? We're going to continue this discussion on the other side. The text lines are lighting up, 855-752-4842. If your headline in your local paper read tomorrow, Governor Evers seeks third terms, what would your reaction be? We discuss more with Matt Rothschild and I, Maggie Dawn, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In a recent report, we told you that 96% of New York City voters found ranked choice voting easy to use and liked that it gave voters more options. So why have 17 states banned ranked choice voting, including 5 just this year? Pro-voter groups tout RCV because it allows voters to choose a favorite candidate without being a spoiler, can reduce negative ads and rhetoric, and eliminates expensive runoff elections. Alaska implemented ranked choice voting in 2022's congressional race, but after upstart Democrat Mary Pottola defeated former Republican Governor Sarah Palin, RCV was blamed. A resolution by the Republican National Committee opposing RCV nationally followed, and Alaska voters had to beat back a repeal initiative in 2024. While used in Maine, Alaska, D.C., and 47 municipalities nationwide, 17 red states have now banned it, including Kansas, North Dakota, West Virginia, Wyoming, and Arkansas. Party leadership and the RNC resolution argue that RCV is hard to understand and suppresses turnout. But where it's been implemented, voter satisfaction is often over 80%. In the New York City primary, 9 of 10 voters said they understood it, and turnout was the highest in decades. Organizers have more work to do. Voters defeated pro-RCV ballot measures in 5 states last year. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org.
Hey, Wisconsin, it's construction season, and the Wisconsin DOT wants to help you safely navigate work zones in your area. Check 511WI.gov or download the free 511 app to see current road work, closures, detours, and camera views on your route. Wherever your travels take you, know before you go with 511WI.gov. That's 511WI.gov. And remember, know before you go. Always park the phone while driving. Sponsored by the Wisconsin DOT.
Snakes, zombies, public speaking. The list of fears is endless. But the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. Distracted driving is what's really scary, and even deadly. Eyes forward. Don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
As Wisconsin is brats on the grill for a tailgate, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back, everybody. Happy Monday. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If the paper read tomorrow, Evers seeks third term, what would your reaction be? 855-752-4842. Just your gut reaction to that. Rebecca from Madison texting in on the WMDX line said, Governor Evers has been a solid and centrist governor, but two terms is plenty. And that is such an important point. Tony Evers is actually a centrist. The entire political spectrum has kind of, there's, I would say, way more sort of distance on the extreme right, and density on the extreme right that it makes centrists seem left. And that is a hard thing to do. I think most chief executives that are elected may have been partisan powerhouses if they came out of legislatures or they were activists or organizers. And then you get into the big chair and you realize, holy cow, I've got to bring a lot of people together to get this governing work done. It's much harder than it looks. I have seen some of that sausage get made, and it is challenging. So what do you think? 855-752-4842. Tomorrow's headline was Evers seeks third term. what would your reaction be? Dan from Wausau has this to say. Evers can clearly do the job, but he's just aged out perception-wise. And while I wish it weren't true, perception is everything. The biggest reason Biden had to step aside was because of perception. It's the biggest reason Trump won, and Evers now needs to step aside. Cam from Appleton throwing his weight behind me and Matt Rothschild for a governor's run. And Cam says to Matt, in debates, Matt, you just have to use slam poetry to respond to your opponent, which I would love to see and would certainly buy a ticket for myself. Folks, I got my guest co-host with me, Matt Rothschild. This, to me, is not unrelated to the Elon Musk, I'm creating a new political party. I think part of what you and I are talking about indirectly is dissatisfaction of people with limited choices. And then we get into these ideas of ranked choice voting, fusion voting, where folks aren't limited to vote for the party with which they registered in primaries. Do you see also a bigger picture here, really, Matt, when it comes to this very micro question of should Governor Tony Evers seek a third term?
Yeah, I mean, the larger questions are, why do we just have two parties? Why do we just have two choices? I've been wrestling with the idea of third parties and fourth parties for decades now. I remember I wrote a cover story for The Progressive in 1989. Do we need a third party? And it wasn't a third party between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, but I wanted one to the left of, you know, where Bill Clinton was taking the Democratic Party. And I'm reminded of a comment that AOC mentioned the first time when Biden ran the first time and won. And she didn't like his politics. And she said, you know, if we were in Europe, we'd be in totally different parties.
Yeah.
But the Democratic Party has a big tent about it. The Republican Party has a small tent right now.
Yes.
With Trump's name all over it.
Right. With motivated.
Yeah. But they get their people out. Yeah.
Yes.
And they appeal to their people. And somehow that's worked. But, I do think there is this longing for kind of for getting along. There's. And to get the harshness of the rhetoric on both sides to be turned down a little bit. I certainly know that just from talking to people that there's a longing for that.
And I think that's part of Governor Evers' appeal. I have legit never heard him yell. And I've been in some private meetings with the governor where people had some pointed things to say about stuff. That's not his style. It's interesting, though, Matt, again and again and again, we'll see polling that will say that people will say, I want compromise. I want bipartisanship. I want the rhetoric turned down. And then when they go vote, they vote for just the opposite of that. And I also think, really hardcore cerulean royal blue district Democrats are oftentimes throwing a lot of bombs themselves at centrist type Democrats like the governor. I think you're seeing that in this biennial budget. And it's simply in denial of the coalition that has to be built for Democrats to win. Hence my bigger picture question about, do we really have a two-party problem or a democracy system problem? And again, I'm really excited to talk to a Republican representative later this week about term limits, which I do think are one of the system reforms. Why shouldn't it be two terms and out for our governor by law, right? Then we're not having these discussions. Democrats and Republicans or any other parties are playing by the same set of rules. I think term limits are good for the system, and that might be a really good bipartisan place to start. Let's go back to the text lines. Lots of folks have opinions here. Love it. Larry from Deerfield says this. I appreciate the desire for someone like Andy Beshear to be our next governor. However, in all fairness, the Kentucky GOP gives him little. Wisconsin is a different kettle of fish. Bottom line, you still need a Dem legislature to make the big changes that are necessary in Wisconsin. Matt's partially right about Biden now that he's not getting in his own way. His recent speeches have been spot on, hardly a mentally diminished guy. What I saw in President Biden was the fatigue of the campaign, the stress of the office, and overly handled, right? Overly manicured, overly massaged. And I think you see that a lot with Democratic candidates. I think you saw it with Kamala Harris. We're going to take a few of our last texts on the other side. And then Matt and I are going to turn to the flooding that is occurring in Texas. And I want to ask each and every one of you this question. How much would you pay to save your family's life from an emergency flood? And do we do enough to avert these sorts of catastrophes and human tragedies in this country, in this state, and in your localities? We continue this discussion on the other side. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
Eagle 1490 AM. As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Governor Tony Evers has signed the biennial budget bill into law. The Wisconsin legislature passed the bill Wednesday in the Senate and early Thursday morning in the Assembly. With more, here's Civic Media's Lisa Hale.
After late-night discussions and a vote by the legislature, Wisconsin's biennial budget is now set. The budget bill passed with bipartisan support in both chambers. Assembly Representative and co-chair of the Budget Writing Joint Finance Committee, Mark Bourne, said that this year's budget came about the same way as other recent budget bills.
Every budget that has come through this committee since Governor Evers has been in office has been a bipartisan budget because Republicans have crafted most of it, which is still true with this document, and the governor has signed it.
Governor Evers did issue a few partial vetoes, including removing the proposed date of 2029 for the closure of Green Bay Correctional Institute.
There's several, but I'll just mention one. On the Green Bay Correction Institute, Eric, we just took the date out. We're going to close it, but we need more compromise on that. We need to get things going before we start taking people out of Green Bay Correctional.
In signing the bill, Evers noted that both parties of the legislature and the governor's office created a bipartisan budget.
Well, we have a story about compromise. We have what we call a budget that's been taken on by the legislature, and I'm going to sign it in a few minutes. You know, no budget is easy.
The governor touted the impact the budget will have on families. The final price tag on the budget is $111.1 billion. See the story on our website for the full budget bill.
The bill passed in the Senate 19-15 and in the Assembly 59-39. For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. The Devil Wears Prada is coming back, but not every cast member will return. The production started last week on Prada 2. Meryl Streep, Anne Hathaway, Emily Blunt, and Stanley Tucci are all back. Adrian Grenier, however, will not be back as Nate Cooper in the sequel. He played Anne Hathaway's love interest and a short order cook in the first film. Grenier's claim to fame is, of course, the show Entourage, but he has not done much since. In other casting news, actor Kenneth Branagh will join the production as Meryl Streep's character, Miranda Priestley's husband. There's a new action comedy that might be worth a look. Heads of State tells the story of the UK Prime Minister, played by Idris Elba, and the United States President, played by John Cena, which seems more realistic than it's ever been. The two characters butt heads but have to team up to overthrow a global plot that threatens freedom. The film is receiving a 66% on Rotten Tomatoes and an 85% audience score and can be streamed on Amazon Prime. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight, a few showers and thunderstorms, and lows in the upper 60s. For tomorrow, lingering storms, then clearing out, a high in the mid-80s, and more sunshine for Wednesday, again mid-80s. Humidity up Thursday with storms possible Friday. It's 82 right now.
This is your captain. We are going to be experiencing some slight turbulence. Please fasten your... Oh, hold on. Just got a video of my cat.
Imagine the pilot of an airplane was as confident as you are texting and driving. Seems kind of crazy when you put it like that.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Why do we want to be proud to be an American? Why are we celebrating the United States?
That's say that you're going to define America in political terms. I define it in terms of what the Founding Fathers did in 1776. An ideal that we are still trying to fully live up to. That all men, all people, I would say, are created equal. All Americans are represented by the stars and stripes. I love the 4th of July.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app, Pat Kreitlow.
On Tuesday, we'll meet a new candidate for state senate in southwest Wisconsin and Dan Schaefer from the recombobulation area on the new state budget.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
Welcome back, and happy Monday. I'm Maggie Dawn, joined by Matt Rothschild today, host of the podcast Wisconsin Forward. You can find it on Spotify, Apple Pods, and of course at civicmedia.us. We've been discussing whether or not Governor Evers should run for a third time. We're closing out that discussion, but I wanted to give some love to all of the folks on our text line participating. Thank you all. Dan from Wausau said this: I'd vote for Mandela Barnes or Cavalier Johnson for governor, but neither can win the state governor's race since there is just too much racism. Kamala Harris, I believe, would have won the country if she were a white male. That is certainly a big challenge here in the state of Wisconsin. And if you don't believe what I'm saying, I simply point you to the Louis Butler Supreme Court race where he was beat by know-nothing, do-nothing, corrupt conspiracy theorist extraordinaire. Oh, yeah, I'm going to tack on the word racist, Michael Gableman, a few years back. If this is in your faint, distant memory, go have yourself a good Google time. It's quite rich. Anthony from Michigan says definitely Tony Evers should run again. Tyler from Wisconsin Rapids says this. This one made me chuckle. Thanks, Tyler. Let mild manner Governor Clark Kent run again. But this time around, he takes off the glasses and waves the cape and battles the Grim Reaper of the House. So Tyler from Wis Rapids, he is in a pro third term for Governor Evers. Terry from Cross Plains says, I'd like to see Governor Evers give it another go, but I'd like to have some competition as well. At this point, we don't know who the Republicans are bringing to the election. That was one of the problems with Biden, right? That you were saying, Matt, we need to see competition. We need to press our candidates to rise to the moment of election. I think this country, because of the two-party system, which our founders never intended, by the way, has created such a preference, advantage, bias, favoritism for incumbents that is part of the problem. That's part of the dissatisfaction that people are feeling. So with that, Matt, I know you and I both wanted to talk about the flooding that has been going on in Texas. It's horrifying. It is an incredible loss of life. The last death toll that I heard was at 95, with somewhere in the ballpark of 27 children and camp counselors dying. There are all sorts of camps along the banks of the river that experienced flash flooding. And I've heard some coverage on other radio stations across this state referring to it as unpreventable, a 100-year flood, nothing to be done here. And that's garbage. Absolute and total garbage. And one of the things that government is supposed to do is this kind of stuff. You cannot go buy a flash flood alarm system off the shelf at Home Depot. Okay? Doesn't exist. You cannot buy flood risk reduction at your local Ace Hardware store. These things are public goods. It's like I can't buy a single widget of clean air, right? I can't buy just, you can buy clean water, but you get my point here. The quantities of this stuff and the way that we consume it make it very difficult to say it costs this much for you and this much for you. And so part of the function of government is providing these things. This is the public health, welfare, and safety element of government. And I worked on research like this when I was in graduate school. I literally ran or helped run an econometric analysis, fancy word. You don't need to know what it says because the name of the study we did is very explanatory. We ran a willingness to pay study for flood risk reduction in and around the Milwaukee, Menominee, and other really river floodplains in and around southeastern Wisconsin, because southeastern Wisconsin had repeatedly experienced these flash floods and people's homeowners insurance was maxed and the premiums were getting out of reach. So, Matt, I wanted us to check in here because the reporting that I have seen is that the regional office of the National Weather Service that was responsible for this area was fully staffed with frontline staff, but that there are vacancies, plural, in key managerial positions, including one managerial position that is specifically about warning coordination and getting the word out. And folks, if you're not familiar with this region of Texas, it's valleys, basically, and cell service. Oh, yeah, that other thing that government helps people get access to the internet, better cell service. It's very spotty in places. So, Matt, as this tragedy has unfolded, I've been curious about your reactions, because this is one of those things that I point to and I say, that's something that we should be demanding, that every person should be demanding government should be able to do something about. Those are harms that we should be able to avoid.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this has been such a tragic story. I mean, my wife and I, early this afternoon, were watching Katie Tour on MSNBC. We love Katie Tour. And, you know, she was covering it. She had reporters there in Kerrville talking about, you know, people, family members who lost loved ones. And it's almost too brutal to watch. And so the human tragedy is just insufferable here. And my heart goes out to any family that lost somebody here. But you're absolutely right. I mean, it says in the preamble to the U.S. Constitution that one of the functions of government is to provide for the general welfare. And this is providing for the general welfare. I mean, here in Wisconsin, we have tornadoes. And so we have loudspeakers all over rural areas and urban areas that will blare a tornado warning so we all can hear it and so we all can get in our basements or get to the safest place we know. The tragedy here, there's a double tragedy. There's a tragedy at the local level and there's a tragedy at the national level. At the local level, Kerr County,
yes.
The representatives on the Kerr County Board had discussed whether they should put up loudspeakers and decided it wasn't worth the cost. Well, those people must be having nightmares today, because look at the cost, the human cost. Forget even about the economic cost right now, the human cost of this tragedy. And then at the national level, I mean, you mentioned the warning coordination meteorologist. I just want to read two paragraphs, one's
please,
from the Washington Post and one's from the New York Times. From the Washington Post, ahead of these floods, this is about Trump's cuts, Elon Musk's cuts, Doge's cuts. Ahead of these floods, the Weather Service office near San Antonio, which oversees warnings issued in Kerr County, had one key vacancy, as Maggie talked about, a warning coordination meteorologist who is responsible for working with emergency managers and the public to ensure people know what to do when a disaster strikes. The person who served in that role for decades was among hundreds of Weather Service employees who accepted early retirement offers offers and left the agency at the end of April. This is when, you know, Elon Musk was, you know, saying you guys are going to be fired unless you leave early.
Yeah, forced retirement. Yep.
Yeah. And then this from the New York Times. Crucial positions at the local offices of the National Weather Service were unfilled as severe rainfall inundated parts of Central Texas, prompting some experts to question whether staffing shortages made it harder for the forecasting agency to coordinate with local emergency managers as floodwaters rose. I mean, you know, this is the human cost of these brutal cuts. And to say nothing of the cuts about studying, you know, global warming, which may have played a part here, too. I mean, we're going to be flying blind here. He's cutting FEMA. He's cutting global warming research. They're cutting
NOAA,
folks from the National Weather Service.
NOAA, yeah. Which houses the National Weather Service. And here's what I want people to hear, because the terminology that gets used is harmful, as are some of the headlines that I've seen in tons of mainstream news. They're calling it the flood of the century. We have now emergency rescues occurring in Durham County, North Carolina. 80 people just rescued by boat in Durham County. There are other horrifying floods in North Carolina that will take lives. The flood in North Carolina is being referred to as a 1,000-year flood event of the Eno River. Again, we're talking about Kerr County in Texas Hill Country. They're calling this the flood of the century, a 100-year flood. Folks, I'm a statistician. It doesn't mean that this only happens once in 100 years. It means that based on historical models, which most good faith scientists now believe need massive updating because of the acceleration of climate change, it means that based on those past models, a 100-year flood has a 1%, it means in a given year, there's a 1% chance of a catastrophic flood of this type. What we're seeing now are 100-year floods with increasing frequency. So the term 100-year flood is bad. Get rid of it. What you should be asking is, when's the last time a fatal flash flood occurred in Kerr County? And oh yeah, 8 years ago, the same damn thing happened. That's what triggered this discussion by Kerr County elected officials about, should we install a siren or warning system, a gauge system, so you can actually have a gauge that will say, oh, the river levels are going up. Ooh, they're going up really fast. We need to let people know downriver to evacuate. These were needless and avoidable deaths. Children, and guess who died last time? 8 years ago. Kids at what? Another sleepaway camp. Mm. This is the stuff that just absolutely boils my blood. And when you think about the intersection of universities that conduct the sort of studies that I was part of when I was where? At university studying econometrics. You talk about the need for scientists in government, objective people in government to help do this work. The people that are at gravest risk for these existential weather emergency events are folks in rural counties. Because what you have in bigger and urban counties is local governmental infrastructure to do some of the work that needs to be done in these places, with the gutting of these departments by Doge and Donald Trump. Rural counties and rural kids are at greater risk. And I hate to put it this way, but it is not just a failure of government writ large. It's a failure of Republicans in government and the anti-tax brigade, that the objective in every legislative session is, no matter what the need, no matter what the risk, we just want lower taxes. So I ask you, each and every one of you, what's your family worth? Are you willing to pay more taxes to avoid these kinds of avoidable disasters? This conversation continues on the other side with you and Matt Rothschild, Nancy on the line, Kurt on the line. Your chance is next. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. I'm Maggie Dawn, and you are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
as Wisconsin has a game of cribbage with good friends. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In a recent report, we told you that 96% of New York City voters found ranked choice voting easy to use and liked that it gave voters more options. So why have 17 states banned ranked choice voting, including 5 just this year? Pro-voter groups tout RCV because it allows voters to choose a favorite candidate without being a spoiler, can reduce negative ads and rhetoric, and eliminates expensive runoff elections. Alaska implemented ranked choice voting in 2022's congressional race, but after upstart Democrat Mary Pottola defeated former Republican Governor Sarah Palin, RCV was blamed. A resolution by the Republican National Committee opposing RCV nationally followed, and Alaska voters had to beat back a repeal initiative in 2024. While used in Maine, Alaska, D.C., and 47 municipalities nationwide, 17 red states have now banned it, including Kansas, North Dakota, West Virginia, Wyoming, and Arkansas. Party leadership and the RNC resolution argue that RCV is hard to understand and suppresses turnout. But where it's been implemented, voter satisfaction is often over 80%. In the New York City primary, 9 of 10 voters said they understood it, and turnout was the highest in decades. Organizers have more work to do. Voters defeated pro-RCV ballot measures in 5 states last year. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. The website climate.gov is no more. The site that served as a trusted resource for federal research on climate change has been officially shut down a month after its staff was fired by the Trump administration. When it was online, climate.gov received hundreds of thousands of visitors every month. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration says climate information will be housed elsewhere on its website. $16 million in state funding could soon be on the way to help farmers improve water quality in rural Wisconsin. The Joint Committee on Finance recently committed the funding for a host of environmentally-minded farm programs after months of work from Clean Wisconsin and its partners. The funding still needs to be passed by the full legislature and signed into law by Governor Evers. Knowledge is power. For a deep dive into Wisconsin's most pressing environmental issues, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Matt Nair on air.
PJ Leash, the bug guy, he heads the entomology department at UW-Madison, and we are talking ticks.
When a deer tick transmits Lyme disease, it takes 36 hours, so about a day and a half. And that's why, in my mind, one of the single best things you can do as a precaution is to do regular tick checks. Because you've removed it, your risk goes down greatly to basically zilch.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back, everybody. As devastating tragedy rips through Texas and now North Carolina, with what some climate scientists are calling a 100-year and a 1,000-year flood, respectively, should the government have been able to predict it? My answer is yes. And here are the facts. Do not listen to what they are saying about it being a 100-year flood or a 1,000-year flood. All that is predictive statistics based on now out-of-date climate models that have not been updated to reflect the current climate reality. As evidence of this, you can point to the same area of Texas where the flooding is now occurring, taking upwards of 95 lives, including children. A flood happened a decade ago. They argued about funding to warn people to detect these flash floods, and they voted it down. And there was a similar flood in 1987. So, you know, not one every 100 years, but that misnaming, that mislabeling, that completely misleading discussion of the risk has led to this reality. Texas has a growing backlog of flood management projects. Anybody surprised here? Ted Cruz was in Greece when the tragedy has been striking in Texas, like he flew to Cancun or wherever he was when the Texas was getting frozen over.
He didn't run back during these floods either. He was touring the Parthenon, kept on his tour.
Yes. $54 billion in backlog, okay? Texas lawmakers, they just appropriated $669 million. Not going to save Texas lives, but what did they prioritize? More tax cuts. And a county commissioner who voted against $50,000 to conduct an engineering study to help this county understand its flood risk said when he voted against it, "I think this whole thing is a little extravagant for Kerr County with sirens and such." I mean,
yeah,
it's like Boss Hogg. That one aged really well, didn't it? Wow. Let's go to the phones. Kurt from Madison, you're up next. Say hello to Matt. What are your thoughts?
Hi, Matt. In my early days before I joined the military, I worked for a surveyor. And most, I would say half of our surveyors were done for the state of Wisconsin. We would map out floodplains based on creeks, rivers, even if they're a dry riverbed. Yep. And if there was anything of a potential, this is going back to the 80s, mind you.
Yep.
Potentials, there would be signs that be in the ground established this is a floodplain. And now let's fast forward to today with all our technology. I get very angry when something like this happens because there are telemetry systems. They're not expensive. Almost most of the vineyards in California use them already because they have to, you know, their entire cost of living is dependent on their crops.
Yeah.
But there's no excuse, absolutely no excuse, to not having telemetry systems placed along this dangerous floodplain. And furthermore, the fact that if you actually did the surveying of the area and you looked at the proximity of this camp within a given floodplain, given the distance of where it's coming from, and it's gaining velocity and volume, I just shake my head. It's just like, we're not talking millions of dollars here. We're talking a bunch of surveys, buying the equipment. Yeah, you're going to have to hire someone to set it up and monitor it. But it's literally a drop in the bucket compared to just 10 years ago, if not 20 years ago.
Yeah, and that's when, thank you so much for the call, Kurt. That's when I was doing my graduate work, and we worked with people that were engineers that did this kind of surveying. We mapped these floodplains. We used geocoding systems to understand them, to help understand water flows. This is doable. This is Army Corps of Engineers stuff. This is the work of government. And for government to say, for Ron Johnson in a hearing 2 years ago in climate change to say, it's fine if people in the South die because we're not going to die as much in Wisconsin as the climate warms up, is disgusting. It's inhuman. I don't understand this acceptance of the failure of government being exacerbated and metastasized by the likes of Donald Trump gutting the very research and scientific work, systems, and employees that we rely on to keep us safe. Matt, go ahead. You got the last word this afternoon.
Well, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, this is the fallacy of the ideology that the government is the problem. When Grover Norquist, the ideologist of the right, says we're going to drown government in a bathtub, little girls actually drown.
When you drown government in a bathtub, what really ends up happening is Americans die more. We're sicker and poorer. Government helps us keep us all safe. Do we need to improve our regulatory systems? Yes. Do we always need to push for greater accountability? I've always viewed myself when I worked in government as a fiduciary to the taxpayer. Hell yes. And we can acknowledge that regulations are for regular people and small businesses to keep our communities safe and competition fair. Don't believe the hype from the right, because that is what it is. If you want to help folks in Texas, here are some organizations that are looking for help. The Center Point Volunteer Fire Department, that is the Center Point Volunteer Fire Department, is accepting online donations. The Kerr County Flood Relief Fund. Oh, yeah. the Care County Flood Relief Fund. They had to set one of those up instead of paying for early warning and detection systems. The Salvation Army's Careville Croc Center. That is the Salvation Army down there. And I will post the rest of these organizations in our show notes for today. My thanks to each and every one of you and Matt Rothschild, our great guest today, Senator Dianne Hesselbein. Stay tuned for Pete Schwabe and Nightlight. And don't forget, tomorrow we've got an expert consumer advocate telling you what to expect from the big, brutal bill and more Trump trade wars. I'm Maggie Dawn. This has been a Monday edition of the Maggie Dawn Show. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together.
Soaring high above La Crosse, this is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. In Texas, the death toll now tops 100 following those devastating flash flooding incidents from the July 4th storm. Dozens of others are missing, including campers, and survivors are describing the rapid wall of water that swept in. ABC's Matt Gutman is in Kerrville.
Brothers Piers and Ruffin Boyette were staying at a Kerr County camp when the floodwaters rushed in.
On the way here, we saw all of the other camps destroyed, obliterated.
One woman, Devin Smith, rescued after clinging to a tree 20 miles downstream. Much of the effort now turning to recovery.
President Trump is expected, the White House says, to visit Texas later this week. The president tonight hosting Israel's prime minister at the White House for talks over dinner and pushing to finalize a Gaza ceasefire deal. Stocks fell on word that President Trump would hike duties on Japan and South Korea goods by 25% if they don't make a deal by August 1st. This is ABC News.
As with